This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Our community is stronger with Joy. Become a member, joy.org.au.
Hello and welcome to Been There, Done That on Joy 94.9. It's lovely to be here on this, what seems to be an Indian summer part of the year. Enjoy the lovely warm weather while we can. But sharing today's chores with me is young Phil.
That's me here, and it's not an Indian summer.
Oh no.
Because we haven't had a frost.
Oh, okay.
So if you have a warm day after a frost, it's an Indian summer.
Oh.
Don't know what it's got to do with the Indians, but anyway.
Yeah, you learn something new every day here. And Gordon, hello.
Oh, hello. I was just sitting here thinking, yes, perhaps not an Indian summer, but it could be any other sort of weather because we've been having fogs lately. We've been getting nice fine days. So the weather is playing up, and there was a thing on the television the other night about the way the weather has changed so much that the fruit and the flowers and the plants and everything. And nobody knows what's going on.
Getting totally confused.
Totally confused. That's like the rest of this program. Ah, what am I saying?
Welcome to Been There, Done That with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Thanks for joining us on our little journey through miscellany. Miscellany. Mm. No, where is she going to sit if she comes in?
I don't know.
Next to Mr. Frost.
Oh, all right then, okay. Yes, we've got lots of little topics that could be quite interesting, and we hope that some of them are interesting for you. We collect together a lot of little stories that have happened in the past week or so and see if there's a bit of a theme running, and we've discovered there is a theme in today's list of topics. So sit back and enjoy what we talk about in part CHOGM, World Immunisation Week, some public disasters that have befallen us at about this time, and also a national celebration, or is it a celebration, Gordon, for Anzac
Day? It's not a celebration, it's a memorial.
A memorial, exactly, thank you. And we've got a couple of gay birthdays and people like that to discuss as well, so stay tuned. But what about the pomp and grandeur of CHOGM?
Yes, Commonwealth Heads of Government Meeting is what CHOGM stands for. And the last, I can remember CHOGM back in about 1982, because I was working at the Palais Theatre and the Queen came there. And a very gracious lady, of course.
To our
little Palais Theatre.
Wow. Mm.
Dare I say, probably not the first Queen at the Palais.
No, there were a few working down there, I can tell you. Yeah, so, and CHOGM is a very interesting time because the heads of government of the Commonwealth Nations get together. Now, a lot of those countries are actually republics, but they're still part of the Commonwealth. They don't have the Queen as the head of state.
So you mean when Australia goes Republican?
We can still be part of the Commonwealth.
Oh, isn't that nice? Mm. It's a club only.
Well, you got to be, well, some of them get born into it, don't they?
Oh, yes, yes, of course, yes.
Do we really care much about the Commonwealth anymore?
Well,
we on the street.
Well, just look at what the reaction to the Commonwealth Games was just a couple of weeks ago. It was just everywhere, and I mean to say it was totally over the top the way they carried on about Australia winning the medals and all the rest of it.
Well, we had the home ground.
Yeah, we had home ground advantage of it. We also, it was I thought it was completely over the top the way they reported it all, but never mind.
To pat ourselves on the back.
Well, of course we do, but then of course in CHOGM that they do deal with a few other things that are very current in the way that we should do. And one of the main things, I think, is what's going to happen with the Commonwealth countries once Britain comes out of the European common market and to Brexit.
Mm. What's going to happen when she actually gives up being Queen?
Oh, when she passes away, yeah. Yeah, well, that's going to... Well, she's 92 on the 21st of the month.
Yeah,
she was. She's... So that's very good. But she's still seems to be quite a healthy lady for her age. You know, I know some 92-year-olds that are, can't say two words together, you know. But
I reckon she's got a good healthcare plan.
I think she does, yes, yes.
I want the best of everything, and I want it now.
Yes.
I wonder if it comes in a gin bottle.
Well, that keeps the germs out.
No, I think that was the Queen Mother.
Yeah.
Yes, she liked her gin and tonic. But with the Chogham, they can sort of talk to one another about what's going on, you know. So it's a chance for them to get together, and they sort of kowtow to the royal family and all the rest of it. But it's interesting to see that the Queen, as the leader of the Commonwealth, has decided to make Prince Charles the next leader of the Commonwealth. She wants that to happen.
She's anointed him.
Well, she anointed him, yeah.
Yeah, so that when she goes, he'll be there ready to take over.
Well, the Commonwealth countries had to say yes, they'd have him.
Rather than that decision having to be made knowing that she won't be back.
Mm-hmm. But I believe India stood out. India didn't want Charles to be the head of the Commonwealth. Well, they're a republic, you see, so they wanted they wanted to choose somebody from themselves, from their own country or something.
So there is an alternative way of selecting who's going to be the leader of the Commonwealth.
Mm, yes.
Rather than heredity.
That's right, yes, yes.
They'd probably want a cricket player.
But it's been hereditary ever since it started, which was the George VI, the Queen's father. He started it all. She's continued it, and Charles will probably continue after that. But we don't know whether... William will want to do it, or Harry will want to do it after that. We're not quite sure what's going to happen in the future. And well, I won't be around to see it anyhow.
Well, see, that's the brilliant part, isn't it? That Charles has made himself a name through being slightly eccentric or greatly eccentric, whereas both Harry and William, they have endeared themselves to the community.
They're normal.
They're normal to that extent.
Well, that's how their mum brought them up.
Yeah, but they're also normal in their relationships. They haven't married crown princesses or something or other. You know, William married a commoner.
Yeah,
and now Harry's going to marry an American commoner.
Yeah,
you know, so the only thing that does is to bring good new blood into the bloodstream of the whole royal family. The ones with William and
a transfusion.
Yeah, it's a real transfusion with the bloodline there, so that's very good. But we've also got to remember that at Chogham there was a thing that was brought up about the rights of GLBTI people.
Well, yes, the Prime Minister had previously, Theresa May, the Prime Minister of the UK, had drawn attention to the fact that Britain actually had a special responsibility to help change hearts and minds in the rest of the Commonwealth countries on anti-gay law that was still in their legislations because they inherited them from GB.
Well, when the colonies were established.
Yeah, but GB has since deleted them from their books and... You know, come on, lads and lasses of the remaining 36. You need to consider the options as well. Get modern, with it.
Because it was during the Commonwealth Games that it came out that the High Court in Trinidad and Tobago had decided that there was nothing in their constitution that led to discrimination between gays and lesbians, and so they've thrown it out of the court, anything to do with it, but. Philip, you had a thing about doing that because it would...
Well, you can change the law, but you can't change the people.
The attitudes that they've had, yeah.
Did the Commonwealth ever have enough power in the past where they could have changed these laws in other countries?
I don't think so. I'm not sure. That I don't know. They would all have had their own constitutions, I would have thought.
So here, what we're trying to do is shame them into changing... But I have a feeling some of the attitudes in some of the less developed countries.
But Philip, we're a developed country, and look how long it took us to get to be having same-sex marriage, an equal marriage. You know, you've got to get through to the blockheads that sometimes are in governments that these things have to change and need to be changed. You know.
And unfortunately, the younger generation will drive that change.
Well, they will drive it, yeah, that's
much
for sure.
Like they will with gun control in America.
That's right, yes. Yeah.
It's sad but true.
Well, Harry and Megan have actually indicated that they're on our side.
Oh, yes, yes. I think that they've younger people these days have been brought up knowing gay and lesbian people or transgendered people or anybody in our community. They've been brought up to know, to understand them, and they've been good friends with them.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be for, it's them that'll change it all, because it's not
well,
the
just
old
like their mother was not afraid of going into hospitals. These two, they met with delegates from the Commonwealth Youth Forum as part of CHOGM, and they have come out and added GLBTQ issues to their list of commitments.
Mm, yeah, which is great.
Yeah.
But also you've got to remember that Harry's coming out here later in this year.
Oh, to the Invictus
Games. To the Invictus Games, yes.
He's not coming out.
Oh,
he's visiting.
Attending. He's visiting. Yes. All right. Okay. Well, that's the old expression. You were coming out to Australia, you know, because it took so long to get here by ships.
But you see, every time I hear coming out and refers to a cute guy, I think, well, yes.
You think of the closet, do you?
Well, yes.
Yeah, well, we've been brought up with that for so long that we just think of coming out as you know, that's the expression that we use, yeah.
Stay tuned. There's more.
Our community is stronger with Joy. Become a member. joy.org.au.
Love radio? Joy is now on iHeartRadio. Take us with you anywhere.
You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris. Been there, done that on Joy 94.9. Thanks for being with us. And if you're listening to us on a podcast, thank you also for listening on podcast, taking us with you wherever you go.
And Philip, whenever.
How do you do it, Philip? How do you get onto podcasts? You know it all.
You can go to the Joy website and on the main homepage, there are the most recent podcasts. Or specifically for us, you can go to our spot on the program grid, and all our most recent podcasts are there in chronological order.
Very good.
And you can just listen. Oh, or you can go to iTunes and figure out how they do it.
And you can subscribe, and each time one gets posted, you'll be advised that it's there waiting for you to listen. We've got a serious subject to talk about. Apart from it being May Day very, very soon, we're in the middle of World Immunisation Week from the 24th to the 30th of April.
Does that explain all those little pricks in town?
Yes, it does. Yes, right. I think so. But one little prick will do it if you're for immunisation. And
the needles are so sharp these days that you can't feel them going in. Brilliant.
A lot of people can't watch a needle going into their arm or watch things because they do tend to pass out. Some of them
don't watch.
That's the idea.
There's a ceiling there for a reason.
I think that they just know it's going to happen, so they go out. But immunisation is one of the greatest things that was ever invented.
It wasn't invented much as discovered.
It was discovered by for smallpox was the beginning of it, I think, because everybody was having smallpox, and I'm getting too old. I can't remember the man's name, but he found
Louis Pasteur.
No, Louis Pasteur was only pasteurizing milk. This other fellow was
Mr. Salk.
No, he was the polio man.
Well, we know all these brilliant people, and you're just not accepting them.
Anyhow, he found out that he asked the girl who was a milkmaid why she didn't get smallpox. She said, "Because I've had the cowpox." And he realised then that cowpox was the way to stop the spread of smallpox. So he made a mixture up of cowpox and injected it into people, and they never got the smallpox. And that was the start of immunisation.
My only thought out of that statement is, what on earth was this woman doing with the cow?
Milking it. She was a milkmaid.
Yeah, but you can get cowpox from...
Well, apparently with cows...
It sounds utterly ridiculous.
You just wanted an opportunity to use
it. It did sort of creep along.
But it was very interesting the way immunisation started.
Well, it was a cow at the beginning.
It was a cow. The cow of a job. Anyhow, that's immunisation. And of course, we should be getting worried about immunisation now because the flu epidemic that's coming to us.
Those who are immunised will have a lesser effect if indeed it does come and is aggressive this year round. Last year, we suffered a fair bit, I think, with the variation of the flu that was happening, but it's changed. It's into a different sort of flu this year round.
Yeah, but according to the statistics, something like 1,000 people died in Australia from the flu last year.
Whoa.
Yeah, so quite a lot of people died.
It was, yeah, a record.
Yeah, yeah.
And horrific season.
That's right. And, of course, they're still trying to add different flu viruses to the vaccine to make sure it keeps up to date with some of the more aggressive types of flu.
I've had my shot, but I must admit this year, because it was a bit different brew, it actually knocked me around. I was a little bit tired and achy for 24 hours.
Oh, were you?
Yeah.
Normally, I've had them every year and it never doesn't affect me.
No,
but
this is the first time. So I think it might be stronger.
Do I have to look forward to that then, do I?
Yes,
I can be knocked out a bit like you.
But you know, you've got to remember that it was Louis Pasteur who kicked off a lot of this by design and laboratory experimentation. Certainly your milkmaid and co, that was by happenstance.
That's right, yeah.
Whereas Louis Pasteur realised that bacteria and moulds were present in the milk, and then by heating the milk, it killed those things made the milk purer and safer.
Right. That's
in fact, Australia won't let you eat cheese from unpasteurised milk.
Well, we used to drink unpasteurised milk when we were kids.
We used to, but
never did it us any harm.
But now we know what's in what I'll call live milk.
Hmm.
And so you've got to kill it by cooking
it. Oh, yeah, because you understand the health reasons why they're doing it, yes.
And anyway, Monsieur Pasteur, Louis Pasteur, back on the 20th of April 1862, completed his first test of pasteurisation, and that led him on to discovering the fact that there were microorganisms in milk and in other things.
Well, it's in food
and the
everywhere.
Air and in the water. And it was those. It wasn't the miasma. It wasn't the mist. It wasn't the breeze blowing through the window. It was these little organisms.
But his research and his way of thinking was modern, and it led to other people investigating sterilisation, disinfection, vaccines, and eventually antibiotics.
That's right, yes.
So it just takes one to drag us out of the primordial ooze of ignorance and not be scared of little germs.
Oh, yeah. I didn't realise I'd been in the primordial...
Well, the human race.
The human race, yes. And this is the development of the human race. We're programmed to progress. We don't go back. We always seem to progress. We find out something in something like Pasteur found out one thing about the microorganisms and things in milk, and then it went from there into other things which people were able to do.
As we might complain about change and wish for the past, the future is actually always better.
It sure is. And I always say we live in absolutely wonderful times now, because years ago, like 50 years ago, most cancers were incurable. These days they've got such great stuff that they can
but
cure
can
lots
you
of
imagine
cancers.
Being around for the first powered flight or the first commercial flight?
You'd be scared.
Those changes would have been... Well, to me, fascinating and just amazing to witness.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
See, I came along so late that we were on our way to the moon. So I didn't have much to do with that.
Didn't you?
I was 9 when they landed,
right.
And they didn't ask me for help. So.
Okay.
Now, we're being reminded in World Immunisation Week that collective action is needed to ensure that every person is protected from vaccine-preventable diseases.
Yes, and most diseases are preventable with a vaccine. This is the problem, you know, and you get the anti-vaxxers that just don't want to do anything about it.
Well, the theme this year is Protected Together, Vaccines Work.
Oh, well, they sure do, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I've had quite a few, and there's certain places in the world I wouldn't want to go without having a vaccination beforehand to protect me.
Well, Phil, Chris, once upon a time, to leave Australia, you had to have a vaccination for smallpox. You couldn't leave the country without having a smallpox vaccination, you know. And some people, I remember my mother had 4 round spots on her arms for smallpox vaccinations. I had it done, but it never, I didn't have any, there's no scar or anything. You can't see where it was done.
One of Monsieur Pasteur's fellow scientists or doctors or medicos or whatever was Joseph Guillotin.
Mr. Guillotin.
And he invented the instrument for capital punishment by which the victim is actually decapitated. His head is sliced off. He was a humanitarian physician and a member of a minor political reform movement that wanted to banish the death penalty completely. So he was looking for a painless method for capital punishment. Because prior to that, there was, you know,
hanging and drawing and
drawing
quartering.
And quartering and all sort of rough and ready things. But this super sharp blade came down and it was all over and done with, and the head was separated.
Because it comes at an angle, the blade is at an angle of about 30 degrees or something or other. It just starts the thing and just slices straight through, and it's dropping at a hell of a rate from the height of the guillotine.
It's time for a Simpsons reference.
Mm-hmm.
They had a flashback episode, and they were in the times of mass, well, not hangings, but, you know, guillotining.
Guillotining.
And they explained that the head stays alive for a couple of minutes after it's chopped off. Mm. So we left a magazine in there for you to read in the basket.
Thank you. I don't know that that's true. No,
it's true.
No one will be able to tell us, though.
Well, you can't talk about what you've read because you're kind of not connected to your lungs anymore.
Oh, right. Of course. So yeah, your voice box.
Fixed all your breathing problems.
The voice boxes are in the other bit.
Yeah.
Mm.
There you are. Thank you.
Well, you've heard about people who lost their head. Well, yeah. Some people literally did.
Well, they did a lot of that during the French Revolution and the rest of it.
Yes, and we wonder if modern methods of dispatching people are any better than that, really.
Well, they just gave a man to death in one of the states of America by injection of chemicals, and I think it took him about 45 minutes to pass away.
Whoa.
But he was asleep. He just went to sleep and then he just didn't wake up.
Mm. Yeah. Well, that's the way they do it with pets and horses.
No, this is right.
With horses, you get a little lump of lead in the ear.
Yeah.
They die of deafness.
But it's probably a very painless way to go anyhow, better than hanging, I think. I don't want to go that way anyway.
If it's punishment, why should it be painless? Imagine what they did to deserve the death penalty.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Which is a whole other argument. But
yeah, that's another argument, yeah. But it's fortunately, Australia does not have the death penalty anymore.
Uplifting. Informing. Empowering. Joy 94.9.
You're with Phil, Chris and Gordon. Been there, done that. Joy 94.9. There's been some world events happening around about this time, and the anniversaries we're going to celebrate or remember or just take notice of. Gordon, you've got your finger pointing at me.
I want to know why it seems to happen around this time of the year. Is it something to do with the stars or something?
Things happen all the time, all the year round, and we just go out and collect a few things.
Well, these seem to be happening sort of in a group, is what I'm getting
Are you one of these people that believes plane crashes happen in threes?
No.
So many people I knew in America were convinced. You'd hear it, see a plane crash on TV one night. A couple of days later, there'd be another one, and they'd all say, "Oh, one more, and then we're safe to fly."
Oh my God! Whoa. But that's in America, because they're quite funny over there because they've
they do have their superstition.
But what was the first one then, Chris?
Well, sort of locally towards home, we've got this sad anniversary on the 28th of April, because back in 1996, Port Arthur was the scene of a horrific massacre of innocent men, women and children. And it's known as the Port Arthur Massacre.
Well, it was. He killed so many people. It was just unbelievable.
We often complain or comment, all those gun shootings in the US that seem to happen so regularly, but we have had our own as well.
But from that, we had gun control. That's one thing that John Howard did that was really good, was to take all the guns off the streets that were not supposed to be there. And I know that there's people that shoot in gun clubs and things like that, but they had strict laws where they had to lock them up and put them away and everything. But we are totally different to what they do in America, which is one good thing.
Well, we became very aware of the danger of guns through that particular event.
Mm.
And It's good to see, actually, in the US at the moment, the current generation of kids coming up through school have grown some ghoulies, or they have...
They've decided they don't want to get shot at school. Quite a radical new way of thinking.
But they've just had another rally in America over the last couple of days. What they've done is they've got the older students to register to vote, because they've reached voting age and they've got registered to vote. And their thing is that if you want guns, you won't get elected. Ooh. And this is what the young ones are saying. And I think that's the only way they're going to do anything and change the whole way people think. And then there was some twit, go and read the second constitution amendment, which doesn't say that you could carry guns, but it's only there in case they were attacked.
Well, it's essentially you can arm yourself as a militia against any attack from the King of England.
And that's the militia is the word. Yes, it's nothing to do with owning guns for the hell of it.
Or carrying concealed weapons under your coat as you walk down the street.
Yes, that's right. There was another shooting up there over the night.
Over the weekend, yeah.
Over the weekend. And it went to a gun. And he was naked. He took his jacket off and he had nothing there.
The gunman was stopped by a man without a gun. So needs to be highlighted.
Which is to be highlighted, yes. It's not that guns stop people with guns.
I don't know whether our listener remembers, but there is the Alana and Madeline Foundation, which was set up by the father of those two girls.
Mr. Walter Mikak.
Indeed. Mm-hmm. And it was set up in their memory to provide support for children who are the victims of violent crimes. The peace of the small town of Port Arthur was shattered by the gunman Martin Bryant, and he started shooting indiscriminately, ultimately murdering 35 men, women and children, and wounding dozens more. Among those killed were the family of Walter Mikak, as you said, his wife, Nanette, and their two daughters, Madeline, aged 3, and 6-year-old Alana. And it's in their memories that they've set up this support.
It's a great thing to do, because how do you remember your does the rest of the world sort of remember the children that were gunned down in that terrible place? You know, it's just amazing.
Well, but it's the innocents
who suffer.
No matter where it happens in the world.
Yep, that's now, right. But of course, then you've got it's not only those sort of places, but you've got the pub in London that was bombed.
There's a little bit of hate crime that goes on in the world, and quite often those hate crimes have been directed at us. There's racial hate crimes, there's ethnicity hate crimes, and there's
sexual hate crimes.
Well, the Admiral Duncan pub in London on the 30th of April 1999 was the site of a nail bomber. Imagine.
No, I can't imagine.
An explosion goes off, but all these nails that
flying everywhere.
Are flying. Oh my goodness me.
It'd be shrapnel, really, wouldn't it? Be like shrapnel.
It is shrapnel, yeah. And there's a whole complicated process of how the police actually worked out that something was going to happen and where it was going to happen. And they were able to actually catch up with the person who'd laid the bomb.
That's right, yeah.
Fairly quick after the event. Fortunately, not too many people were involved in the actual bombing.
But it certainly put a scare in the gay community in London. You know, it really did. It really frightened them, you know.
Well, in England,
it was the whole of England, actually. It frightened a lot of them.
He was a neo-Nazi who was hoping to stir up ethnic and homophobic tensions. And I don't know how that would actually improve the world. I don't know.
But he thought he was doing it.
Three people were killed with the bomb, but none of them were actually really gay people. They were friends of. And in the pub for...
They were just having a drink. Drinking with their friends, yes. And they were the ones that got taken out. Then we've also got coming up this week is the anniversary of Gallipoli.
Well,
on
the
25th.
National Day of Remembrance. It's not a celebration of war. It's a remembrance of those who actually gave their life or their mind in war events.
That's right, yes.
And if you drive through the countryside of Australia, in all the little towns, you'll see stone memorials.
The obelisks with the names written on them.
Where so many people, so many men, were lost from those little communities.
It,
And even the more modern wars have actually been recognised as well as being as traumatic for the general population and the armed forces, whether they're volunteers or recruited, because the byproducts of war are not nice. Chemicals, there's poisons left, right and centre, there's mental fragmentation.
Well, it's the people that come back from the wars too, the ones that survive all these things that they have to put up with. They usually have suffering from PTSD and all these sort of mental problems, but nobody seems to be worried about them too much. They're sort of left to their own devices. There are a few good people that are working to make that change a lot, of course, and one of them is Ben Quilty, who's the artist. He's done a lot of work. Mm-hmm. He was a war artist. He went to Iraq and he painted and he saw some of the things that happened up there, and he realised that these men that came back were not well. They were physically okay, but mentally not well. And this is the thing with wars that's changed with all the horrors that they go through. It's the same as the Vietnam War. The things that the men saw up there, if you go to Vietnam and you look around through the war fields where all these things were happening, we shouldn't have been there, because there's no way known we were ever going to beat the Viet Cong.
No.
There was no way known, because they had all the traps and the things that there
was just underground.
It was just
local knowledge. Now, that was the thing that was wrong with the Gallipoli event in Turkey, that our troops were under the command of English. They were working on the basis that an attack was on level ground and you just charged and you had single shot rifles and it was one on one and with equal small arms.
But where they landed was at the wrong spot.
It was in the wrong spot. It was cliffs, had machine guns trained on them. It was a totally different war environment. Mm. And we paid the price.
Yeah. There was actually 1,100 Anzacs were killed at Gallipoli, but there were many more killed on the Western Front. Up in the Somme with at Villers Bretonneux and all those places, Passchendaele, Amiens, Hamel, all those spots.
You know that because your street is one of those names.
Yeah, I live in Amiens Street, yes. And then all around is the streets from the battles of the First World War. It's a permanent memorial to the
And there was something on the TV last weekend that there's a new at Villers Bretonneux.
That's the Sir John Monash Museum.
Indeed, Sir John Monash Museum, but people, according to a press report that I also read last weekend, was that it's a very moving exhibit. People have to walk in the trenches.
Mm-hmm.
They have people speaking to them of their experiences. They have sounds of war. There's lots of other things there. And the report that I saw, people were coming out and
crying.
They were moved
by it all, yeah. The people up in that area, Villers Bretonneux, for instance, that was the place where the Victorian school children paid for a school to be rebuilt, and it's called the Victoria School.
Right.
And it's got all Australian names all around the place. You know, they just love Australians up there, because they actually saved the whole town from being overrun by German forces. The thing that I have about Anzac Day is it is a day of remembrance, but the way that the press and the media, I should say, are carrying on about Anzac Day. To me, it's a quiet day where you go to the dawn service and reflective. You go to the dawn service, you go to think. You don't need to be boosted along there by all this continuous hammering on the media about 2 weeks beforehand and all the rest of it. I just think it's wrong. I think you just carry on yourself. And there's a there's a great play that was written by Alan Seymour called The One Day of the Year, which was done in about the early 60s, I think it was. And that was about Anzac Day. And it put it into perspective, the way the younger people weren't connected with the Anzac spirit, and they couldn't understand why their father went out and got drunk and played two up and went to the march. They couldn't understand that. It was a whole thing about the children couldn't work out why this had happened. Great play. They don't do it very often, but oh my God, it was a very moving play to see it.
Oh, well, it should be on TV. Should be.
Well, you might be able to get it, I don't know.
It should be part of school curriculum, maybe.
Perhaps, I don't know. Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah. You're with Gordon, Phil and Chris, been there, done that. Joy 94.9. We've got Cash. Take Me Home.
But I need this, yeah, I need this. You're my fault, my weakness.
Joy Podcasts, where you want them, when you want them. joy.org.au or your preferred platform.
A little bit hoarse, that was. Oh. We're all suffering in the studio with a little bit of hoarseness. Poor Philip had to leave the room and get some cough medicines.
I've got the dreaded lurgy.
Already. And you haven't had your injection yet for your immunisation.
Mine was out of stock when I went to the doctor.
Yeah, mine wasn't in, so I've got to ring and find out when it's coming, so get it done. This week, Chris, we've got lots of anniversaries. Quite a few different anniversaries.
We've got a couple of birthdays. We take for granted the fact that a lot of facilities, structures, processes that we enjoy at the moment have always been there, and you know, there was never a day when we had to have a workaround. But can you imagine if you were trying to go from Australia to England or Northern Europe, you would have had to actually, you would actually have to go via South Africa and around Africa completely before you got up there. The little Egyptians had been very, very clever long time ago, and they'd actually connected the Red Sea, which is part of Northern Indian Ocean, with the Mediterranean. Mm. They dug this channel, which wouldn't have been an easy task.
But then it fell into disrepair. The sand filled it in again. Basically, the land went back to where it had originally been. Britain at the time were going to India and all those places and to Australia, and they needed a shorter cut to get to these countries to save time and money, and I think money being the main thing. So I think it was the French that decided to build the Suez Canal, wasn't it?
Well, they certainly were. There was French involved in the activities. Ferdinand
De Lesseps.
They got going. And they connected, but there was lots of people killed in the process of digging this canal. They didn't use machinery because they had lots of people. And 125,000 workers lost their lives.
Digging the canal.
Wow. What a
But see, mathematically, that was acceptable because they had 2.4 million Egyptian workers involved with the digging. I still don't see how you justify 100,000 plus.
But they would be very happy to be working there because they probably got the money for it, paid. Yeah.
And it was opened in 1869.
And 17th of November.
10 years earlier, it had been started on the 25th of April, 1859.
10 years to dig it.
Now with modern machinery and other things, they would get through it a lot quicker, I would imagine. In 1937, on the April the 27th, the bridge in San Francisco, crossing from one point to another, was opened. It was completed. It's a suspension bridge. Have you been over it, Phil?
Many, many, many times.
Oh, yes.
I've also spent hours and hours just staring at it.
Why?
It's beautiful. It's a piece of engineering in the most beautiful location, and it's pretty.
It's
Art Deco.
It's a very Art Deco bridge, isn't it? Yes.
It goes from the city of San Francisco to the little port of Sausalito.
Well, Sausalito's around the corner. It goes to Marin County.
Marin County, yeah.
No, Marin County.
Oh, got the emphasis on the wrong syllable.
That's correct. And Marin County is also known for where Lucasfilm are located, the people behind Star Wars.
Oh.
Before Disney bought them.
Oh, right, okay.
It's now probably in Anaheim with everything else.
But it's a beautiful bridge. It
beautiful
really is.
Beautiful bridge. And it's
a mile across.
Yay.
And it's in the process of being rebuilt, actually, as we speak.
Well, every bridge, I think, is like that, isn't it?
It's being retrofitted for even bigger earthquakes.
Yeah, yeah.
It survived the earthquake while I was there incredibly well, and the USGS were quite disappointed they didn't have sensors on that measuring the relative movement.
But it's a beautiful bridge, I have to admit. Yeah.
Certainly is. And the little birthday that we need to comment about at this particular point of time is that of the singer Andrew Ivan Bell, and he's the lead singer of the English pop duo called Erasure, and we've got a little song to go out. He has been around since 87, been around for a long, long time. He was born in 1964 on the 25th of April, and he's made a name for himself, but also, apart from being openly gay, and he'd had a long-time partner, Bell told a magazine back in 1986, "I don't want to go out of my way to talk about my sexuality, but I'm not going to pretend that I'm not gay. I won't portray a heterosexual in videos, and we're consciously doing lyrics that could apply to either sex." So he was sort of carrying out his own little battle of normalising our existence. And he's been HIV positive since 1998, but he was lucky to be around to have the modern medications. However, he was born with another sad disease called a vascular necrosis, and he's had both hips replaced. And as he calls it, it keeps him from pogoing around.
Does anybody know what a pogo stick is these days? That's the point.
Exactly. Boing, boing,
boing. Boing, boing, yes.
The kangaroos have got them built in.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's hear from Andy Bell, Caught in a Spin.
All right. And before that, we're going to have to say goodbye, because we're going to be caught in a spin.
Goodbye.
And we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.